It's Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I'm Kristen Bry. And we talked, I at least lamented last week about the surprising and sad news that This Is It, which is one of the nation's and was Milwaukee's oldest LGBTQ bar, closed without a lot of warning.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, there is a glimmer of hope that a new LGBTQ-friendly third space could open up in Milwaukee's River West neighborhood that would offer a haven for community building, events, arts, and dining, but with some help. So Chef Vanessa Rose is the operator of a fine dining pop-up concept called Mothers and joins us now to talk about the campaign to open House of Bridges in the former company brewing building. Welcome to the show, Vanessa.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great.
Yes. So I think you started getting press on this last week. And so what is the concept or vision of what House of Bridges could be?
So first and foremost, we want to be an LGBTQ plus, just as you said, haven for people to come in, build the community, organize the community. We know with everything going on politically, especially in our community, that the opportunity to organize and to gather, to be able to have a good time together, as well as decompress, is really important. And with This Is It now gone, we're lamenting the fact that it's not there anymore, and we've got to go somewhere. So we want to decenter the role of the drinking and the dancing, not that we won't have it, of course, but to make it much more about how do we come together, learn about each other, celebrate each other's cultures, because as no other community, I think, can say, our community transcends class, it transcends race, it transcends faith. You really can find everybody in our community, and I think that's a beautiful thing worth celebrating.
And are those the pieces that are going to fill the gap for people in the community that aren't being filled around the rest of Milwaukee?
I really think so. You know, I think that I would have transitioned a little earlier if I felt more comfortable in those spaces. And that's not to say that I didn't eventually acclimate and feel comfortable. Sure. But I'm also not, I'm not getting any younger. I'm getting on 36. And the bright lights and the long nights and the loud music were never really my cup of tea. And I know there's a lot of people in the community that are just as likely to play a video game or a board game or do political organizing as there are people who want to bust a move. And, like, the diversity of our community, I think, gets overshadowed by the limited access to different types of venues.
I never really thought about that as far as when you think of gay bars.
Right.
But you're right, as other spaces.
Well, yeah.
That connection's not always there.
You know, there's a huge following of, you know, there's even like a subgroup of the LGBT community that call themselves gamers. And like, clever, funny, we're here for it. But a lot of us are a little bit more introverted. And yeah. I think especially following the pandemic, people kind of forgot how to socialize.
Right.
And that to have a little bit more of a low-key spot, a little more chill, a little more vibey, where we can have a conversation, because Lord knows they're not happening on social media. And some of these conversations are very hard and not connotative at all to a club with loud music and bright lights or to social media platforms.
Absolutely. So you're choosing to fundraise through a crowdfunding campaign instead of, I think, what a lot of restaurants seek out a bank loan, or maybe if there's different small business grants available. So why specifically do crowdfunding?
So we went the crowdfunding route, one, because as a community space, we want the community to feel involved in what it is we're doing. And as a 20-year veteran of the service industry in all of its facets, I've been parts of organization where, because of the high loans and the interest and all of these other things, the priority is always to pay your debt on time rather than keep prices low and wages high. And it's a difficult industry to work in. If you are not passionate about it, you're not going to make it.
Yeah.
And the wages, I don't think, have increased for a decade. You know, like a lot of places are still paying the $15, $16, $17 an hour as when I started. And there's such a talent disparity. Like, we have a lot of really big fishes in the city, but like their wages aren't going up either.
Hmm.
Especially following things like Top Chef, with Dan Jacobs representing the city on it. Like, Milwaukee has a food scene that is growing in spite of all of the challenges that we face. And in order to try and kind of buck the trend of restaurants closing after around 10 years, we're trying to look toward the long term. And part of that means not shooting ourselves in the foot when it comes out to these massive loans just to get the ball rolling.
What kind of money are we talking?
So the floor for us right now in the crowdfunding is $30,000. We figure with that amount of money that we can rent the space, put down our security deposit, get all of our licensure, and get a good chunk of our first order in. And, you know, because we've got so many different concepts at play at House of Bridges, because it's not meant just to be fine dining, that if we get our foot in the building and we have to start as a concert venue, we'll do it. If we have to start as a bar, we'll do it. You know, right. Like, it allows us to be a little bit more mobile. It allows us to be more fluid and flexible. And as anybody in the restaurant industry can tell you, it's not a moneymaker. You know, so like, you spend
slim margins.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, 10% at the best is what I hear. And that's going to be harder with some of the tariffs that we're staring down the barrel of, and a lot of the struggles that the industry faces normally.
And so what is the, like I said, I heard about this. I think Urban Milwaukee covered it. I know Journal Sentinel has covered it. What has the reaction been since you started getting press?
Oh, you know, since that news came out that we were particularly focused on the company brewing space, you know, I belong to the Facebook River West neighborhood page. I've had people come out and volunteer for door knocking campaigns and letter writing campaigns and, you know, people that just want to be involved in any capacity. And I think that's really one of the things that makes this community shine is in the light of This Is It closing, Darnell Watson, also known as Iconica Strange, the general manager of This Is It, was able to wrangle like $23,000 to help people out. You know, we are a giving community and we're accustomed to living on the margins and on the edge. And, you know, even if people can't contribute, people are showing up and showing out in ways I never would have imagined.
And to that end, not only are you trying to get House of Bridges rolling, you're doing a fundraiser for This Is It, right?
Yes. So one of our events is a prototype for a dinner theater concept that we'd like to operate with. It's called Eat. Fun little crossover between dining and drag right there. We've got four performers on each night, the 22nd and the 29th of from the This Is It crew. And we'll be serving some dinner alongside it. You know, a whole global smattering smorgasbord that is truly what it is to be part of the queer community.
All right. So where can people get more information on the fundraiser, on that, so the crowdfunding campaign, the tickets for Eat, and just in general what you guys are trying to do with House of Bridges?
Well, we have a brand new sparkly website, hobmke.com, so houseofbridgesmilwaukee.com. You'll be able to book your tickets for Eat there. We also have a link up for the New Market campaign where you can make a contribution. You can read more about what our philosophies for cooking are, a little bit more about our mission and who we are, as well as follow us on Instagram. We have one for each facet. I am 8686D.herd. And then we have mothers.mke. as well as hob.mke.
It's a lot of accounts to manage.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it helps that there's really not a lot of crossover right now, and I am really excited for a payroll so that I can get back to the kitchen instead of the social media managing and the website managing. And, you know, you guys are great, but I don't know how much I want to be
on the radio.
You're
like, I don't, the media thing. Yeah.
No, that's fine.
You know, I do long-form conversations way more than I do interviews and junkets. So, like, that's...
Well, you did great.
Well, yeah, thank you. You did great. Appreciate it.
This was just a short-form conversation.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. That's a great way of thinking about it.
I don't know if we've been called a junket before. I feel like... Puff up a little bit.
Oh, yes. So there
we're
you
on
go.
A junket.
We're here to make people feel good. That's what the service industry is all about.
All right. Well, Chef Vanessa Rose, you can check out House of Bridges. Donate. I would love, love, love to see this come to fruition in River West.
Me too.
So, all right. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll have more after this on Spanning the State.
When we come back, we're going to talk to an author who was part of The Onion's original staff and now has put out a book about the satire website and newspaper. But first, it's time for ABC News and local headlines.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bride.
And I'm Brian Noonan. You probably know this, Kristen. Satire is described as, quote, the use of humor, irony, exaggeration, or ridicule to expose and criticize people's stupidity or vices, particularly in the context of contemporary politics or other topical issues. Mm. The reason I bring that up is because in 1988, a group of UW-Madison undergrads and dropouts started publishing a free weekly newspaper. Their unique editorial stance was, you are dumb. What started as a way to make some cash turned into the bedrock of modern satire and changed the way we consume comedy and the news. The Onion was and still is hilarious and brutally accurate satire that has grown from a weekly newspaper to a global phenomenon. Christine Weck was a member of the original staff of The Onion from 1988 to 1990. She's the author of a new book, Funny Because It's True, How The Onion Created Modern American News. Satire, and she joins us now. Christine, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, so I love this style of book where you talk to a lot of different people and the interviews are broken up and it makes you feel like you're actually there rather than just reading a report on something. Was there any hesitancy from any of the people you contacted, any of the people you worked with in the past about cooperating with the book?
No, there really wasn't. I think the fact that I had been on the original staff a long time ago made me a trustworthy person for them to talk with. And I, you know, and it was funny because some of the later generation of people, they were actually sort of excited to meet me, which I thought was really
fun. Cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So it actually, it allowed me a way to get into the story in a more like almost intimate way, like almost immediately, you know, because we already sort of were on the same ground when we started.
So walk us through what it was like at the beginning of The Onion. And like, was it just a ragtag crew? How would you guys spitball ideas? Like, what was it like?
Yeah, I mean, ragtag is a good way to put it. My roommate, Tim Keck, is the person who founded The Onion along with his friend Chris Johnson. And we just sort of kept, he asked me to help out from the very beginning. I was there literally from the very first issue. And then I brought in friends, my friend Matt Cook, who was an improv comedian at the Arc Improv in Madison. Some people might remember that. He wrote most of the first year. So it was a lot of, we were all, you know, 19, 20 years old. You know, we were just kids. So it was that kind of environment. But it was also exciting because The Onion as a business was successful almost immediately. And people were paying attention, even though we were putting out, you know, ridiculousness every week. Like, people immediately liked it and wanted to, you know, read it. So that was just really interesting experience, especially at that young age.
So explain the editorial stance of you are dumb. Does that mean that if I'm reading it, I'm dumb? The world is dumb? Where's that dumbness come from?
Yeah, it's interesting because when I first started this project, I thought, well, that's not very nice. But then as I talked to people and understood that this is, like you said, just said early on, you are dumb is more about how people are stupid. Satire is about the stupidity of the human race.
Right.
And, you know, even The Onion, you know, they can get, you know, dig in there pretty sharply. I think a lot of their approach comes from a place of actual compassion and support for the underdog, you know? So it's like, you are dumb, but like, we're going to point this stuff out so that maybe we can make the world a better place. I mean, that's my idealistic version
there
of
you
it.
Go.
But yeah.
So what were some of the inspirations? Because I feel like at 88, SNL had been around for like 12 years at that point. And so what was there anyone else that you like took inspiration from, or is this all kind of just like your guys' sense of humor put on paper?
Yeah, I think I know Tim Keck and Chris Johnson, they really like Spy magazine. And so that was definitely an inspiration. The Onion was definitely, it had a literary approach from the beginning. It wasn't really trying to relate to, like, you know, TV comedy or other kinds of comedy. It was written comedy.
Yeah.
And so we were influenced by that. You know, like, I grew up reading National Lampoon and Mad Magazine. You know, lots of other people did that. You know, Woody Allen books, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So it was coming from, like, a literary comedy perspective, I think.
Got
you
it.
Know, our 20-year-old version of that. But yeah.
Now, you said the business took off right away. How long before you guys realized, wow, we've got something that's, this is going to last and it's influencing things?
Oh, I don't think anybody thought that at the beginning. I mean, it's the Onion for a long time. It was interesting because people, some really interesting people came and went because they were like, oh, this is fun. It's silliness. It's doing well. But like, I want to do something in the real world. And it was hilarious because the Onion ended up, you know, becoming really successful down the road. So, yeah.
Well, and then you guys also made the move to be online, right? It's one of the first online humor sites. And so who was kind of behind knowing like, oh, we gotta transition with the times?
Yeah, I mean, so I was gone by then. I had nothing to do with that. But they realized pretty early on that, I think one of the things that inspired it was that there were Onion articles that people were starting to like type into their email and send to each other. And the Car Talk guys on public radio read an Onion article out loud and laughed their heads off, and they weren't getting attribution. And so they're like, wait a minute, we need to do something about this. And so there was someone on staff who knew how to program a website. Remember, this is very early. This is 96. This is a very new idea for everybody. And so he programmed this very static website. They basically took the print paper and just like stuck it up on the website. But there was nothing like that in the world at the time. And so it just exploded very quickly after that in popularity.
Christine Wex, our guest, she is the author of Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. She was on the original Onion staff. Christine, we're going to take a really short break because there's a lot we want to talk to you about. We'll be back in just a second on Spanning the State.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry.
And I'm Brian Noonan, and we are talking to Christine Wex. She was on the original staff of The Onion, and she has written a book called Funny Because It's True, How The Onion Created Modern American News Satire. Christine, I wanted to get into when you decided to do this book. You wrote that you decided to do it in 2018. What made that the time that you thought, okay, it's been 30 years, I want to revisit this?
Well, I moved back to Madison, you know, my college town. I'm from the home state of Wisconsin, from Boston, and naturally made me think about my college days. But this was also the time when people were starting to talk very intensely about fake news, the kind of the bad fake news, you know, and the Onion to me represents good fake news. That's trying to, you know, satire is trying to make the world a better place. Bad fake news, maybe like the political ad you just played, is something that tries to sow chaos and make us afraid. And the Onion's on the good guys side.
But how do you, like, in this day and age now, as we said, there is fake news in the spirit of satire that is supposed to be taken as a joke, but that is the joke now, right? We're like, this looks like an Onion headline, and that is the litmus test of like, no, this has actually really happened. And so what, like, how do you parse out what is good and what is bad, and how people should have the media literacy to navigate all of it?
Yeah, it's interesting. We're going through a lot of changes right now in the kind of almost the infrastructure, you know, of reality.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds very, very highfalutin, but I think that's part of our problem. You know, our news infrastructure was kind of set up to reflect like a kind of prior, I don't know, world or something. And so now we're sort of struggling to figure out what the new one is, and that's generating all kinds of, you know, interesting and, you know, sometimes funny and sometimes weird. And there's definitely a lot of strange things happening around. Like, how do we decide what's true? How do we decide what's real? You know, who do we trust? Who do we not trust? So, yeah, there's a lot of those questions right now, for sure.
Well, with all those questions, where does the Onion fit in today's climate?
Yeah, that is a good question. the Onion, I think, is on the side of truth. And you know, that's why part of the reason I called the book funny, because it's true. And I there's a point in the book where I try to, it's hard to define what truth is, but to me, truth is supported by facts and reason, but there also has to be like an emotional or intuitive truth at the same time. And that they have to have both of those things. And I think the Onion is really good at using comedy to kind of, you know, it's relating on a, on an emotional kind of intuitive, like bodily level. That's what comedy does. And I think that has to be part of what truth is, if that makes any sense.
Now, Christine, I'm assuming that you were done with the book by the time the news broke about the current rendition of The Onion trying to buy InfoWars, or were you able to sneak that into the book at all?
No, I wasn't. I did manage to get in that they have, they're under new ownership as of 2024, a new group. It's gone sort of going back to being like a business in a way, as instead of being like sort of a corporate owned entity. But that's not, the InfoWars thing is not in there, but I did think that was like a brilliant.
Brilliant, right?
What, Onion going into real life in like in a crazy way, you know? So I feel like we're going to see more of that kind of thing. Maybe not from the Onion, but I don't know. There's all these strange, you know, boundaries that are being crossed right now. So yeah, but I thought it was great. I thought it was hilarious and a great sort of giant prank that they were doing.
Well, Christine, it has been great talking to you. The book is Funny Because It's True: How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. It is a great read. And who would have thought, coming from your little ragtag group in Madison, that now The Onion's style is being imitated by countless programs and people. Congratulations on the book, and thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Just a reminder, I'll be at Boswell's Books in Milwaukee on Thursday at 6:30.
Oh, wow, great.
Very nice. Boswell's Books, Milwaukee, 6:30. Go get the book. Have Christine sign it. She'll sign it, sure. I'm making promises for you, Christine. Just blame me when people come up. All right. Thanks, Christine. Let's do this. Okay. Then there's more. It's Spanning the State. I believe it's time for me to fly. We're getting going a little bit early.
A little bit early. The Brewers got to play, man.
Yeah, they're playing at the Mariners for spring training. And then next week is opening day.
It's crazy.
New York for the Brewers on opening day.
I can't believe we're already, I mean, this, I know, this is just,
I'm happy.
You're happy?
I'm happy because that means the spring is moving into warmer weather. We're getting there. Baseball season always means that summer is right around the corner.
That's true.
So I am excited.
I'm excited. It's just shocking to me, the trope of how quickly time goes. The fact that we're already over halfway through March, feels like March just started, and yet here we are.
Yes, and as Frankie gets older, you'll see that time goes faster and faster and faster, and then you go, oh my goodness, whatever happened?
How do I have a teenager?
How do I have a daughter who's getting married? How do I?
Yeah. You know,
it's like, all right, things go very, very quickly. But we will be back tomorrow. Even though the Brewers are playing today, we will still come back tomorrow. And we got another jam-packed program.
Another jam-packed program. Talking to a UW-Madison professor. She wrote an article about the manosphere. So you might remember that a certain CEO of Meta was saying how we need to bring masculinity back to corporations.
That just drips irony coming from him.
Well, you know what's really funny? Because we have a minute.
His haircut?
Well, no, that. But remember, was it like a year ago when him and Elon Musk were going to cage fight?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, they were going to do the whole thing.
They were going to do the whole thing. What happened to that? I want to see these two cage fight.
Yeah, they're both chicken. They're all
but
they
thought they're both so masculine that they're going to do the thing.
Here's a secret. I'll share this about the manosphere and people like those two guys. There's a lot of talk. The guys who are really the most masculine, they don't have to keep telling you how masculine they are.
Yeah.
They show up, you can tell, and that's it. The guys who do all the squawking, probably going to do a lot of walking, too. Yeah, a lot of walking backwards out the door.
What was your theory the other week? That some of these guys just haven't been punched in the face before?
A lot of guys haven't been punched in the face. And Brandon agrees with me. Some guys just need a punch in the face. And then it's all over, right? It's not, no need for long lawsuits, no need for trials and judges. And if it's proven that you have libeled or slandered somebody, you take them out, you punch them in the face, and it's all over. That
and
being
on that
said,
note, we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye.